This is your latest Fast Talkers podcast with me, Jenny Gow. Please do subscribe, and then whenever we do a Fast Talkers, you'll be able to hear it first. Enjoy the show. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Fast Talkers, the programme that brings you up to speed with everything that is happening in the paddock, even if we can't be there. Now, one of us is at the track. You can work out which one it is as I introduce everybody to you. First of all, let's go across to Nikki Jussila. Nikki, you're in Finland. You're the Finnish commentator for Formula One, working for Seymour. You also have your dog with us. Last time you brought us Christmas jumpers, this time not one, but two dogs. How are you? How are they?
Fine, thanks. They are perfectly all right. And then I also have this amazing, amazing raccoon pillow. So I won't disappoint you even this time. And my Nikki. Lauda, actually, I don't know if you can see it, but anyways, it's Nikki. I think he was driving with Brabham. So that's one of the greatest pictures that I know. I have to have it on my living room wall because I was named after Nikki Lauda back in the, back in the day. But I'm fine, thanks. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And obviously, there's a lot of Bottas chat. So we thought you were the perfect person to speak to when it comes to Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah, that's a tricky one, actually.
It is a tricky one. Yeah. And on the flip side of that, we will have one of the British journalists as well. I will introduce him in just a moment. But first of all, let's go across to Julianne Serrazoli, who joins us. She is Bungie TV producer and F1 specialist. You have a beautiful backdrop. Does that mean you're the one at the track?
Yes, so this is Portimão's beach, I think so. That's why I don't have Nikki Lauda, because that's not my home. That's not where I live with this kind of setup. And I have in front of me the track. I'm staying quite right next to the track. I'm attending to the race this weekend and attending to every race this year, because now I'm working for TV. And because of COVID, we have to stay close to the track, because everything is closed around us here in this Portimão's region. So that's why I have to stay here with the view of the track. Maybe in the end of the show, I might try to show that to you. But thanks, Jenny, for having me back again.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's a delight to have you on. And the teaser that you get to see the track at the end of this programme is well worth staying on for. Not just the content alone. We bring you so much more than that. Let's cross over to Lawrence Edmondson. He is ESPN's F1 editor. He is not at the track, but he's going to bring us as many sirens in this programme as he can fit into his audio amazingness. Lawrence, it's lovely to have you on the show. First time on Fast Talkers. How busy has the start of this season been for you?
It's been fairly busy, yeah, as I'm sure it has for everyone else in this call. But unfortunately, I haven't been at races. So I have mainly been here in North London with plenty of police sirens around me. Not coming after me, I'll just add, or if I don't think they are yet. it's been a busy start, but a good start, because hopefully we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a season this year that is genuinely competitive, which it's been a while since that. So I'm happily busy and hopefully back at races at some point later this year.
Funnily enough, Nikki and I were just having this conversation saying, haven't been to a race for too long, desperate to get back into the paddock. And we've all got FOMO, fear of missing out. And Julianne is, we're going to have to live vicariously through you all this year until we get to go back to a track, Julianne. That's the only way we can do it.
Yeah, so therefore, I cannot complain about traveling and about crazy season that lies ahead of us, isn't it?
No, it's all good at the moment. And news today that Canada is the first race to be cancelled from the season. But do not worry, we have a track up our sleeves to come out. Turkey is back on the calendar. Lawrence, you've just hit publish on your story. It wasn't the biggest surprise, but how do you think the news will be, I suppose, received?
Yeah, I think it's been expected for a little while. We knew that Canada had this 14-day quarantine that didn't look like it was going anywhere anytime soon. And because Azerbaijan is the week before, there was no way that F1 could go to Baku, do the quarantine that was necessary, and then have the race in Montreal. So something had to give, and it was Montreal. The slight upside to the announcement that just came out is that there's an extra 2 years on Canada's deal. Of course, they've missed the last two races. So it seems like they've got those back to extend, which is good news, because I know all of us on this call, I think, like going to Montreal, and the people in Montreal do a fantastic job putting on a race. So yeah, and then Turkey coming in, that's what I heard a few weeks ago already. I think Julianne said that there was some whispers of the Nürburgring potentially, but obviously they've gone for Turkey. So I'm not entirely sure on the reasons between the two, but Turkey's very welcome as far as I'm concerned. It was good race last year. And then this year, hopefully it won't be raining for the whole race. And, you know, we might see an event in the dry there, which I think would also be pretty good.
Because Turkey is entering a lockdown period right now because the number of COVID cases is going up. But it's only, I think, a 17-day lockdown period, so it gives time for the situation to get better, and then Formula One can go there. For Formula One, it's better to go to Turkey and then Azerbaijan, or either way, because they are close together. But if one were looking into trying to put Turkey for a later date, because they know or they think they are going to need it.
Yeah, certainly a lot of uncertainty as you look towards the latter end of the calendar. Right, let's get on to our first talking point, because it's going to be us talking about Lewis Hamilton versus Max Verstappen and what we hope is going to be a real title challenge. Nikki, let's start with you. How do you see this fight shaping up, and how good do you think these two drivers are?
Well, first of all, we all have to remember what happened actually. Not only a couple of years ago when Sebastian Vettel and Lewis were battling also in the beginning of the season. And it was pretty much the same. Everyone was expecting that it would be an epical fight between Ferrari and Mercedes. And what happened? Lewis was overwhelming and won yet again one of his seven championships. So we have to be careful not to like overthink it. But having said that, I think Red Bull has gained so much between the seasons, and what's been lacking with the downforce, you know, in the rear axle this year has really hurt Merck. So I think the epic fight will be like something that we haven't been able to see since like maybe Senna Prost days or whatever, or Häkkinen Schumacher. Or I think it's going to be an epical fight, but still we have to be a little bit more careful when judging the situation. Like Christian Horner just said, that we have to maybe see 3, 4, 5 races until we know exactly what's going on. Maybe different kind of races and tracks layouts and everything like that. But have to say that I'm pumped up, because I've been I've been predicting that Max is going to win. I said it even last year, before the start of the last year, I said that Max is going to be one hell of a contender for the championship. So now that it's really happening, I'm really, really happy, because I think he's superb talent. And I think actually he's even faster now at this very point than Lewis. I have to say, because Max is a fantastic driver.
Oh, the other dog's on the move. I think the other dog wants to come and say hello now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's Pablo.
Oh, Pablo. They're just too cute. Come and say hello, Pablo.
Pablo.
Hey. Hi, Pablo. Oh, super friendly.
You can stay here.
Julianne, help us.
So manly, so Formula One.
Love that. Julianne, what do you think?
Pablo, if Pablo wants to say anything about Lewis and Max, I think everybody wants to have a say. I don't know.
I think he has an opinion about Roscoe, I think. What do you think about Roscoe?
Too big. Too lazy.
Yeah.
Too cute. Julianne, what do you think about the battle that is Hamilton versus Verstappen?
I think Imola was quite interesting, because Lewis Hamilton, we're not used to seeing him making mistakes, but we're not used to seeing him being forced to make mistakes. And also Max made a mistake in qualifying, knowing that he had the car to be on pole. So he knew he had everything with him for the first time in a long time. He's been waiting for this chance, and he goes there and makes a mistake, because the stakes are really high. And they're going to force each other into those mistakes. And if I agree with Nikki, I think it's too early to just say the Mercedes are not going to develop. They're not going to find a way around their problems. They cannot redesign the car for reasons we know, but they are Mercedes and they have recovered before. They have recovered against Ferrari. They have recovered. Let's remember in Singapore, they will always lose races. If you ask the Mercedes mechanics, they're going to say they just found a very good curry in Singapore and then the luck just changed in Singapore, but that's not true. It's just engineering and they turn a lot of things around. So yes, we have to be careful, I agree, but I don't want to be careful because we've been waiting for this fight for so long. I want these drivers to be forcing each other into mistakes like we've seen in Imola. And then in the end of the year, let's see who makes less mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the exciting thing, is that it's going to come down to the drivers and when they excel and when they make mistakes. So Imola qualifying was a perfect example, like Julianne just said. You had Lewis put together a really fantastic lap to get the maximum out of that car. And you saw how much Valtteri was struggling. Lewis had similar problems with tyre warm-up, but still managed to put together that lap to put it on pole. But Max, realistically, had he got his lap together, would have been maybe 2.5-3 tenths faster. So you've got a situation where the pressure really gets put back on the drivers. And my hope is that over the course of 23 races, or however many we end up having, that really does go down to the wire, because I would love to see, talking about Max Verstappen, I'd love to see him in a position where he's fighting for a championship, where the pressure's on, because we know how fast he is. As Nicky said, arguably he's faster than Lewis over a single lap. Impossible to tell really without putting them in the same car, but you know, you can make that statement and it wouldn't seem outlandish. But what we haven't seen Max do is go into a title situation where everything's on the line, the pressure is on. And then the few times we have seen a little bit of pressure on him in the past, he's sometimes cracked a little bit, maybe said something he shouldn't have said, certainly made it very exciting. So if we end up with that situation going into the final few races of this year, wherever they may be, for me, that would be fantastic. And I'm already excited about this. I know we shouldn't be. Nicky's right. Two races in, we shouldn't get overexcited, because we had that Sebastian Vettel example in 2018. Where it all went wrong from the German Grand Prix onwards, pretty much. But with Max, I think, and with Red Bull, you've got better operators. And I think, actually, considering where these two cars are now, considering how difficult it will be to develop these cars within the regulations we have, actually, I think we probably do have, or we can certainly start to get excited about having a championship battle to the very end.
Nicky.
Yeah, and I was just about to say that the racecraft the Max has got at the moment is amazing. We also have to... Hey, Diego. Diego. He's playing with the bottle, empty bottle, plastic bottle. Hey, if you have something to say, you have to come on air now. Well, the race pace, even in the first race, was better than Lewis. You know, the few mistakes that he did, like overtaking in the fourth corner that you are not supposed to do. If he'd had been a little bit more mature and waited for the opportunity, maybe to the a little bit further to the straight line after, you know, for the best overtaking opportunities for the first corner, and not wasting so much energy, maybe so much about his tires and such, he would have won the race. But he was immature and he has to learn from those kind of things. And this is the new situation that he's maybe driving, that he's got the car now. He has to do every single thing right in every single race to beat Lewis, because Lewis also, you have to remember, is that good.
I was surprised to see Lewis make two mistakes, I think, in Imola. The first lap, first turn, where Verstappen just outgunned him, and I think, and he took the cautious approach and just let Verstappen in front of him. But he definitely bowed down to Verstappen, in my opinion. And then obviously the crash. So he was trying to overtake Russell and slid off the track, managed to get the car back in, but he described it as feeling like it was just taking forever. And it did take a long time. And that's quite uncharacteristic of Hamilton, Lawrence.
It is, but that's the battle that he's in. I think the first corner, you know, Max made a great start compared to Lewis. If Lewis lost anywhere, it's probably in that initial start phase away from the line. And then Max, there was an example of where he gets the balance absolutely right between aggression and, you know, positioning the car exactly where it should be. Because he left Lewis with no other options going through there and took the position. And then Lewis was fighting back. And it was actually looking like an exciting race. Lewis was starting to put a bit of pressure on Max. But what we saw was Lewis pushing to the absolute limit lapping a car offline on the wet when, you know, really maybe he should have waited a little bit longer. But that's the kind of pressure he's under. So great to see Lewis in this situation as well, because I talked about Max maybe cracking under the pressure. Well, you know, we've seen Lewis in pressured environments before, but we haven't actually seen it for several years now. So it's interesting to see now at this stage of his career, is he any better? Would he still crack under pressure? You know, and I think that was an example of it. And he got massively lucky that the safety car that came out as a result of the collision between Bottas and Russell gave him the lap back. Otherwise, he would have been a long way down the order, and the points gap at the front would already be looking significantly in Verstappen's favour.
I kind of like also the, you know, different personalities that they, these two amazing drivers have. And I like the Max being young and edgy and kind of nervous, and just, you know, his appetite is so great at the moment to win something big. Even he's 23, but he's been around so long. And then Lewis approaches nowadays is so calm. You see how he tweets and how he reacts with the other drivers. If Russell makes a mistake, if Lando has his lap time disqualified, it's kind of like, daddy is here, no worries, you're going to be a great champion one day. And this kind of different kind of attitude. And Max is like, gloves on and we're going to fight and no, you know, any kind of sympathy or whatever. So I like even this thing that there's totally different person, you know, kind of personalities, Max and Lewis. So I think it's great. It's going to be epic.
Also epic, I suppose, from that race is this quarrel that we seem to have had between George Russell and Valtteri Bottas. Now, you could say, oh, the media's just making a big deal out of it. It's not as big as that. But actually, this is a whole dynamic that Mercedes have kind of made for themselves. Now, this is a Mercedes team that make very few mistakes. But Julianne, what happened in Imola just shows the potential for things to go wrong, I think, with regards to how you manage the dynamics between Bottas, Hamilton and Russell.
For me, the most interesting...
Oh, she's muted herself.
Somebody just calling me.
Oh,
it's not the COVID police, which has been calling me every single day when okay. I am in the UK.
COVID but police. Anyway.
Yeah, the police in the UK call you to make sure you stay at home. So my life has been going to the races and quarantining. That's my life. So
I want to be a COVID police when I grow up. Not just a regular cop, you know.
I know exactly what they're gonna ask me. So it was them calling me in Portugal. They haven't realized that. But the most interesting thing for me was Toto's response to it, the way he sort of attacked Russell. For me, he's a very intelligent man and he doesn't do anything just because, oh, that's the first question, the first answer that came to his mind. He thought it through and he thought that was the best thing to say to the press. So it looked like as if he was trying to create problems to see how Russell would react, to see how Bottas would react to trouble, and they're testing them both. He used that opportunity to test them both and to see in terms of personality what would come out of it from both sides. I was in the pen and for me it was funny to watch because you can see different personalities and different ages as well. George, he was choosing his words very carefully, and his speech was perfect with what he believed. He believed at that time he was 100% right. But for me, it looked like he was saying all these things and he was going to rush to his Twitter to see what people were talking about him. Whereas Valtteri looked like he was saying, okay, he crashed into me. And he was just looking forward for his first beer out of that track, just forgetting about the race and moving on. So they are, just as Lewis and Max, they are two completely different personalities. And for me, it looked like Toto was trying to tick on them to see what will come out of it.
I think that's a really important and quite crucial point there in Toto's reaction, because probably one of the only reasons that George hasn't kind of got his way sooner into the Mercedes seat is the concern of what happens when you have George Russell versus Lewis Hamilton. One of the reasons Mercedes love him so much is because he's a real team player. You know, he comes into the team, he does try hard. You know, on the days that he'll try and beat Lewis, he will beat Lewis. But, you know, he also recognises the need for team harmony. And from where they were before, way back when with Rosberg and Hamilton, they don't want to revisit that. So, yeah, for Toto to kind of point out that Russell didn't act in the way that he would expect him to act around another Mercedes contracted driver on track is significant, I think. And the fact that he also pointed out that Valtteri hasn't shown any need to prove himself within the role at any point, and therefore you kind of feel like that was a real tick in the box of Valtteri. However, on the other hand, the reason that the whole accident happened in the first place was because Valtteri was so much further back than Mercedes would expect him to be in the order. He was racing against a Williams. So Toto also made a note of that in his comments to kind of give Valtteri the hurry up, say, look, you know, if you want to keep this seat, if you have any chance of keeping the seat, you're probably going to have to be a bit more competitive than this. But equally, you know, the potential negatives of bringing George into that team were also shown at that race. In the long term, I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think the decisions, you know, I think by the end of the year, we'll look back at this and we may remember it, but it won't be a significant turning point. But I think it was an opportunity for Toto to kind of point out to both drivers, here are your weaknesses. And if you want this seat next year, these are the areas where you're going to have to improve.
Yeah, I agree. And the good point was that what Lawrence was just saying, that it was a big surprise that Valtteri wasn't actually doing any better in the race. The racecraft was bad. And in Finland, the atmosphere has also been, everybody has been waiting since the day one, or maybe it's the second Mercedes year, that he's going to be better, constantly better, challenging like Nico did, have this kind of internal fight between Lewis and it's annoying. Even after the last race and what happened with Russell, the main focus wasn't whose fault was it, but the main focus in Finland was how on earth is this going to happen, that Williams is going to, you know, try to pass on the race Mercedes, which is like dominating force. So that is the big question now, that what has led to this.
Nikki, we don't mind if you go and get the bottle. And as Julianne said, if you want to tell the dog off in Finnish, we're all up for that.
All right, cool. Yeah.
If people are listening to this on the podcast, they're going to be so confused right now. Nikki's just left to go and reprimand his dog in Finnish and to get the bottle from the dog's mouth as well.
A wolf treatment, kind of, you know.
What he was talking about, how on earth was Valtteri in that fighting with George? I think we have to come back a little bit to Turkey. It was a little bit kind of the same race for Mercedes because they couldn't put a warm temperature into their tires. And it could be the same situation here because here there's no grip in this track. It's not going to be as complicated as it was last year because the track has just been resurfaced before the last race. It's exactly the same as Turkey. But the temperatures are going to be a bit lower, probably. It's going to rain on Friday, rain on Saturday afternoon. There's smaller possibility. But there will be no grip again. And again, Mercedes are going to suffer to put temperature in their tires. And again, Valtteri will suffer more than Lewis by doing so. So we might have another very complicated weekend for Valtteri.
But that is the good question. I don't have a technical knowledge for giving absolute answer. What is going on? Because he's got enough time to figure out with his engineering team how to make his tire work better, because that is the main thing. He's not a bad driver or slow driver, you know, no one can say that he is, but the main problem with the Mercedes is that is the tire, the way he uses tire, how much better Lewis is with the cold tire, with the warm tire, with usage of the tire. And there's just no comparison with Lewis. And that is the big question that I just don't understand how they've not figured it out with Valtteri. The team has, you know, he's struggling always with the different kind of conditions when there's extremes. Lewis is always better and he's like, I just don't get it, to be honest with you.
I think that
he seems to be more aggressive. So he can put temperature into the front tires, which is the problem. And then the setup can be better for the overall for the car because he can do that. If Valtteri cannot do that, it's just like it's a snowball.
And the other issue Mercedes faced is that in Bahrain they were dealing with overheating of the rear tyres a huge amount, and then the situation completely swapped around to struggling to get temperature in the front tyres at Imola. So meanwhile, they're trying to get this car balanced at all times anyway between the front and the rear axle, which has been an issue since this regulation change has come in and the changes they've had to make. So I think that's the problem they're facing. And then if Valtteri's at, you know, at either end of this, and I think, again, it's one of Lewis's natural, it's his natural ability. You know, we've heard it before on the team radio. Sometimes he'll be telling the team what's going on with the tyres before they know it, and he'll be making calls on how to manage tyres for the race before the team realise it. So you're up against one of the best in the business at doing it. And I think, you know, as an overall package, Valtteri's not quite there. The other thing, and I haven't checked this with anyone at Mercedes, but interesting enough, talk about needing front tyre temperature. The one thing that disappeared from the car this year was DAS. So maybe with a bit of DAS, Bottas would have felt a bit more comfortable, or certainly for his qualifying lap. Because he had a good his Q1 lap was better than his Q3 lap.
Yeah, it was.
Much he was struggling with tire temperature.
He was in the traffic, wasn't he? He was complaining that I didn't get Q3. Why they put me in that position? I remember interviewing him in the pen, and he was mentioning that.
Yeah, and that can be enough, and that can be the difference. And it's just these small things, but yeah.
Yeah, because they don't have the advantage they had before. So a problem in the traffic in Q3. He would have been third on the grid, and now he's eighth. So that's the difference also.
Yeah, the gaps, aren't they, between the cars this year are just that much smaller, that if you are 0.4 off your teammate, then, you know, you're not just next to him on the grid. You find yourself shuffling back by a long way. And certainly the competition so far this season up and down the grid looks fantastic. So the pressure, I suppose, is on the drivers more. Julianne, you've obviously seen the drivers and been able to look in their eyes. Who are the drivers that are coping well, do you think, with this additional pressure from the season? And who are the ones that maybe are struggling a little bit more?
I think the drivers who feel they have a better car under their sleeve. So it's always like that. Max is really willing to show us everything that we've talked about him since he started in Formula One. Always, also Lewis, you look at his eyes and he's either shining, going like, okay, I was waiting for this. Some people were saying that I'm only winning this amount of races and championships because I didn't have somebody to compete with me. Now I do, and now I'm gonna show you how good I am. I feel in those two drivers, this very strong will to show us wrong or right, or whatever we've been saying about them in the last few years. Another driver that is very confident is Lando and Charles Leclerc. He realizes he's really well, he does really well as being a team leader at Ferrari. He's got a very strong teammate, but he's still struggling. And I think the interesting thing about these two first races, and probably we're going to see here this in Portugal as well, and you should get better in Spain, is these drivers who move teams, like Daniel, like Seb with many other problems as well, Sergio, they're not doing as well as expected, but they had 1.5 days with testing, and then a race in Bahrain with 40 degrees, another race with 12 degrees in the rain. So you can understand why it's happening, but all of them, they know we cannot stay for too long. So I think it's very interesting. These guys who are very experienced, apart from Sainz. Sainz is not as experienced as the other ones, but still he has, what, 5-6 seasons under his belt. And we're talking about Max possibly winning the championship with the same kind of experience. But compared to those other drivers, he's the one who is suffering the least, or who seems to be suffering the least, and he is the least experienced of all of them. I think that's a very interesting point of these first two races.
And the other thing to point out there is a lot of the drivers who have stayed where they are from one year to another, essentially driving the same chassis. You know, the cars, okay, they have changed, the aero's changed on them, but a lot of it is fairly similar. So, you know, you're kind of, it's almost like being dropped in mid-season. We see how difficult that's been for a number of drivers over the years. So I think when you only have one or two driver changes on the whole grid, it's quite easy to overlook how difficult it is to adapt to a new car. And we saw a similar thing with Daniel Ricciardo when he went to Renault. And, you know, initially he had a big loss of downforce compared to what he was used to with the Red Bull. And he looked fairly kind of, you know, on the same level as Hülkenberg. By the end of the season, he'd started to show what he was all about and move ahead. And then he had Ocon come in, of course, who was also going through that transitional phase, and Ricciardo looks a lot better than Ocon. So I think it really is an indicator of how difficult it is and how easy it is to overlook a driver change kind of impacting the driver's performance and where we expect them to be.
I may be a little bit surprised how close Carlos Sainz has been already in the two first races, because I was expecting that Charles Leclerc has to be absolute number one speed-wise and also leader of the team, because I've never considered, and I still don't consider, Carlos Sainz being a future world champ. Absolutely not. If you compare side by side Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, Sainz is a good driver. Charles Leclerc is the next one in the Maranello, at least, because they signed such a long contract with him, and what he's been able to do in the lower, Formula 2, Formula 3, everything like that. I was expecting that the gap would be bigger. So I think that is going to be really interesting to follow during the season, how close Carlos is actually going to be regarding Charles. And if the gap is tiny, then I say Charles has done something wrong. There's something he has to refigure for the next season. But I expect Charles to be a lot faster still than Carlos Sainz.
I think it's racecraft. Racecraft Sainz is very close to Leclerc. Leclerc is something Leclerc still has to improve. In qualifying, I think it's very hard to find a driver, maybe Max, who would be as fast as Leclerc. When you speak to Ferrari people, they are always like, I don't know where this time came from. And he was fourth in the first two qualifying of the year. So qualifying is a very strong asset for Charles, but I think with race pace, he still has a little bit to develop.
Lando Norris, for me, has been an unexpected bundle of fun and pleasure and talent this season. I think he's really stepped it up. Lawrence, from what you see of him, are you surprised that he's that far ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, or seems to be ahead of Daniel Ricciardo by that much?
I am a little bit, if I'm honest, because I really did rate Ricciardo, and I still do rate Ricciardo up there amongst, you know, the top kind of three or four, you know, certainly top five drivers in F1. So that Lando's there, and I guess it kind of confirms a lot of what we suspected, that he is very good. But, you know, he had a very strong start to last year and then tailed off a bit. So I think while we can jump to a huge amount of conclusions from the first two races, and that's what we get paid to do, right? So we enjoy doing that. I think, you know, you still have to look at the season as a whole and see when Ricciardo really gets settled in that car, what's he capable of? And but it was a shock to me to see the difference in pace, say, in Imola during the race, when Ricciardo was told to move over and let his teammate by. It's not very often. Well, we had it with Max a few times back in the day, but that was Max. And by the way, just to go back a couple of points, a driver who nailed it as soon as he first got into a car and changed teams, Max Verstappen is your example, so it can be done. He won his first race. It's so rare that you see Ricciardo kind of look under that kind of pressure. So I am surprised by it. But great, because, you know, we need Lando to be a good kind of young British driver coming through. That's great to see from kind of Brit's point of view.
He's like, I like love following him. If you take Russell versus Lando, talking about just a personality, I just love Lando Norris. I think he's a great guy. And there's some, you know, nice aura about him that he's probably the guy that is really nice to hang around with. If you want to have a pint with one of the drivers, I would probably pick Lando Norris. I don't know if he's old enough to drink in England. Maybe he's England is 18. But anyways, I would probably pick, well, he had to be the whole McLaren, actually, Ricciardo and Lando. Those are, you know, great guys.
I think that's the combination everybody's looking forward to the most in the press conference. The new pairing system in the press conference is just, it's fabulous value. We're hoping it gets more feisty. I was expecting them to put Bottas and Russell in the same press conference. They bottled out of it. They've gone with Bottas and Perez. That's interesting enough, believe me. When it comes to Portugal, the Grand Prix, what do we think is going to happen? Who's going to win? And what's going to be the surprise of the race? Let's go with Nikki first.
It was Kimi answer. Blah.
Kimi's gonna win.
Yeah, Kimi last year. I mean, if he overtakes 10 cars in the first lap again, it'll be something impressive.
I don't know. It's just always the same for everybody. We'll see tomorrow. I think Max is going to win. I think the, well, it's hard to tell. It's going to be really, really epic battle once again for the pole. I've kind of lost confidence with Valtteri. Two races, he has to be in some kind of turmoil, what he's doing right, what he's not doing, I don't know. And just what we discussed earlier, how both of the drivers, Verstappen and Lewis, has to be on top of their game, also adds weight what Valtteri has to do even better. And I just don't have the faith that he's going to deliver. He has to be Perez, that's a certain thing. Perez, they are like the second drivers in the team, and they have to give the support for the number ones. So I think it's going to be battle between Verstappen and Hamilton. I said Max is going to win, and maybe Lando has to be third.
Julianne, let's come to you next.
Like to always get it wrong. So after everything we talked about, the drivers who are changing teams, not being adept, I'm going to go for Perez just because I want to go all in one. So the win and the surprise would be the same person, would be Sergio Perez winning the race. I don't know what's going to happen with Max. I still didn't make up my mind what I would make happen. Something would have to happen to Max for Perez to win. It wouldn't be a straight win, but still I haven't managed to think about it. I'm with Nikki. I don't see Valtteri recovering in this race, because of what we're talking about earlier, low grip. I think it's gonna be a hard race for Mercedes. Of course, we've seen Lewis before, just understanding the grip. What he did here in Portugal last year was amazing. He was completely lost in the first few laps. He understood what he had to do. And I think he won by 25 seconds over Valtteri. It was absolutely impressive. So Sir Lewis Hamilton, I think we have to refer to him like that now, right? He always surprises us. He always finds a shortcut, even when he has to reverse in the gravel. He finds his way, so we cannot set him aside. But because I want to get it wrong and I like to have a wild guess, I'm going to go for Perez winning this one.
I love that. You're sticking, the Latin Americans are coming out in you. You can't help yourself. You've got to go.
It's the only one. It's the only one I have.
Lawrence.
I think all the points that Julianne made earlier about the track are going to be the key things here. Cold weather, relatively new track surface, and who can deal with that. And then I think you're looking at Lewis and Max. They're the two masters in those conditions. I think probably we're going to have a fairly similar race to Imola. The only difference maybe is that it's going to be easier to overtake, so we might actually see more wheel-to-wheel racing, at least I hope we will. So I'm going to go, just to be different again, I'm going to go for a Lewis win, because he was so impressive last year. Max second, and then Leclerc on the podium as well, because I think the Ferrari is actually way more competitive than maybe some people are giving credit for, and someone like Leclerc, I think, you know, when the conditions are a little bit tough, he's got that car underneath him, he seems to be doing pretty good job of it, so I reckon he might come out as the best of the rest. But yeah, concerns for Valtteri as well. He's already 28 points off Lewis.
Yep.
Which when you think about that, you know, if that was the case in mid-season, we'd probably be writing him off. But after two races, it's madness.
And usually he starts his seasons really well, and then it gets worse.
Well, this is the other thing, yeah. Lewis usually starts a little bit slower, gets better, doesn't he? And then that kind of gives the teammate the end. So, and then Checo as well. He's now 34 points behind already, which is madness for, you know, somebody who's in arguably the fastest car on the grid. But yeah, I think this race is not going to be kind to them. It's not the kind of place where they're going to feel that comfortable. Maybe in Spain in a couple of weeks' time, that's when those two guys will come back into the frame.
Yeah, you feel them just going, please bring back a track that I know, that I can predict, that I can have a reference point and a gauge for everything else. Because at the moment, they seem a little bit lost and swimming around, Nikki.
Yeah, I was just about to ask Julianne, if Is it going to be really windy on the weekend, do you know?
It's windy right now. I haven't checked the weather forecast for wind, but it's really windy right now. Here in this region, it's. I remember I was live here on the radio, I was working for the radio for the race last year, and I was saying, it's raining here on one side of the media center, it's not raining there because there's a lot of hills around it. So the hills might protect with the winds in some corners and some not.
We actually discussed with our technical expert, Ossi, who has been working with Ferrari and other teams also back in the day, that he said that Mercedes and even Aston Martin and actually the Mercedes powered cars are suffering with the side wind this year a little bit more than with the cars with the more rake. So that would also put a little bit more pressure, and I would bet a little bit more on the Red Bull side if that is the case in this weekend, that it's going to be really windy and side wind and such. So I think Red Bull and those cars with the higher rake are going to cope maybe a little bit better.
Right, last question. We are fast running out of time. Sprint qualifying. It's a thing. It's going to be in Silverstone. Right, Nikki, you go first then. Plow into this.
Why fix something that ain't broke? You don't give points after football game after first 45 minutes. I absolutely hate it. Formula One moguls don't trust that they have a good enough product in their hands. Just leave it alone. Leave it as it be, and we'll be all fine.
I'm willing to try because they've chosen. Well, they haven't announced it yet, but Silverstone, Monza, and well, Interlagos. I don't think Interlagos is going to happen. So let's focus on the first two. Racing is usually good, so I wouldn't mind having one third of a race plus in Silverstone, and especially the way it's going to be. So all out, one set of tires, no pit stops, no second lap. Let's start thinking about race strategy. No, it's a proper sprint race. Although they don't want to use the word race, because I think they cannot use the word race for something that happened on Sunday or whatever. So they put sprint qualifying, which for us in Portuguese is horrible to translate. So I'm going to call it a sprint race. Sorry. FIA, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to call it because it's impossible to translate. But because of the way they did it, put it in tracks in which racing is good, and because strategy won't play as much as a big part as it would in a normal race, I'm willing to try and see how it goes. I think what Günther Steiner said about it is the way I think about it. Okay, we've been brave enough to introduce it. Let's be brave enough to recognize if it doesn't work.
I think the strongest argument for it is, what are you losing? Well, you're losing one practice session. What are you gaining? You're gaining a 100-kilometer race. Now, if I was a fan at a track and somebody said, you know, what do you want to watch, a practice session or a 100-kilometer race on top of your qualifying session and your normal Grand Prix, I would take it. And I think, you know, for those weekends, it is going to be interesting. It is going to be exciting. And now we have 23 races in the calendar. Again, we're meant to have 23 races. It gets a bit monotonous after a while doing the same format over and over again. Whether this is the absolute best, brilliant answer to it, I'm not 100% sure yet, but giving it a go isn't a bad idea. My only concern is that I don't think it's going to create good races. I think the idea of a 100-kilometer sprint race on these tires with no pit stops, you remove a lot of the variables that allow for overtaking in a race. It's not unusual in a Formula One race that the first half is a bit dull, but you know it's building up because drivers have been forced onto different strategies. Just look at Bahrain earlier this year. You know, you had Lewis going early with that pit stop, gained the lead, but in the pits, it wasn't that exciting. We didn't see it on the track, but we knew it was slowly building towards a situation where Max would have fresher tyres at the end, Lewis would have slower tyres at the end, and we'd get the battle that we were waiting for. I don't think that kind of thing is going to happen over a 100-kilometre race. You know, I just don't
But Lawrence, the base. Of course we cannot compare Formula 1 with Formula 2. But with Formula 2, we have two types of racing during the
absolutely
weekend.
Horrible. We have the sprint race is absolutely horrible. I hate the reverse grid and everything. It has got nothing to do with the ideology of Formula 1. You have to bring the team factor, because it's almost as important the technical side, and that is the driver side also. It's the whole package. Everybody's talking. Why is Lewis always saying, you know, thanking about the boys and girls at the Brackley and at the track side and everything like that? It's the whole package that it's like the factor. And less races, maybe 17, 18 races, and trust, just have a common faith and trust that the qualifying system is enough, you know, to have a entertaining weekend. And then, you know, 300 kilometers per race, I think it's enough. That's Formula One, not sprint racing.
Your F2 point, you know, we have had good sprint races in the past, but the tires in F2, believe it or not, are even kind of shonkier than the ones in F1. You know, they really do struggle to keep them in the window. Yeah. And that's what creates, that variation creates the racing. I think, you know, with the cars we have now and the tires we have this year, they're going to be allowed to use the medium or hard compound for that weekend in this sprint race. And I think they'll all naturally probably figure out which is the best one, even if they only have a practice session to do it in. They'll figure out which is the best one. They'll all go on a similar strategy, and you won't get that variation that you're looking for, because the tires just aren't quite as on the limit as they are in F2. Now, if we put this forward to next year, when we've hopefully got cars which are more capable of racing wheel to wheel with each other, and potentially we can start to rethink the way that the, you know, tires work, and whether we want to make them work for a sprint race, where we have select compounds for the sprint race, you know, that could be an option going forward. And the slight danger is that we have three really boring sprint races or sprint qualifyings or whatever you want to call them this year, and then the idea gets completely canned, when actually there may be some value to it if it's tweaked and kind of managed in the right way.
It's just going to give Mercedes and Red Bull more points. I think that is a downside, I see.
That's guaranteed. But then are the other teams really competing for them with them this year? You know, no.
The first idea, which was to mix the grid a little bit, that's not going to happen with the way he ended up.
For me, the difficulty is for the fans, those who are dedicated, who never miss a qualifying, who watch the race and who commit vast amount of their time to it. Are they really going to have a Friday now when they're at work to suddenly go, oh, I'll watch qualifying and then I'll watch the sprint qualifying and then I'll watch the race? For me, it's just very difficult for fans to stay connected to 23 races, and now 23 races with three extra days where they need to invest their time, not just in practice, but in something that matters to them. It's going to be, I think, quite difficult for them to manage that.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't put the qualifying on Saturday morning, the regular qualifying on Saturday morning, sprint qualifying. It may be because the times between, you know, were not enough for if a car gets, you know, completely smashed up and might not be able to take part in the race or whatever, so the sprint race.
If you think about this football, which is like the biggest sport in the world, and then you have Formula One, which is the biggest motorsport and one of the biggest sports in the world, if you take a global recognition, you can do whatever you want with it. Sorry, Shane, but ski jumping, or you can do whatever you want with the floor bandy, or you can do with the handball even. You can change the rules and have a, I don't know, 12-hour games or whatever. But don't touch Formula One, because I think you have to have some kind of, understanding what are the principles in sport, and football and Formula One are sacred sports. I won't touch them anymore. They've tried all kind of different qualification systems and they've all dropped and come back to this system that has been used for like 20 years now.
Diego. The dogs are really keen on this idea.
Yeah, because I'm getting, you know, excited, so they're probably also getting pumped up.
Love it. Well, I think VAR worked perfectly well when they introduced it to football. So, you know, I think this is going to be plain sailing all the way. Enough from us. Let's talk predictions. We've kind of already had a little go at it, haven't we, with Portugal. So instead, I want to know who's going to win the championship this year. Nikki, see if the dogs agree or not.
Max. Definitely Max.
Julianne? Yeah.
Lewis.
Lawrence? I get this deciding. I could just say Perez or something, couldn't I? I'm not sure I'd have a job in the morning. So, so it's really tough. Let's hope it goes down to the wire, but my gut instinct says Lewis, his overall all-rounder ability will carry him over the line just ahead of Max.
Fascinating. Guys, thank you so much for joining Fast Talkers. Thanks to the dogs for their commitment. But Julianne, before we go, yes. It's the big reveal. Please show us the delights.
I'm going to try not to be like really messy with this, okay? Because I really want you guys to see it.
This is our private track walk.
Let's go. So there it is. It's here in this valley. So what I was talking about, it being protected by hills, the hills are here in this valley. You can see the track, and this is where Sergio Pérez is going to win the race on Sunday. You heard this
all right there. Cool.
Love it.
You no have- no you have to keep holding this here.
Well, from everybody here at Fast Talkers, we hope you enjoy the race and we'll speak to you again soon. Everybody, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.